Wednesday, Bishop on Air with you this morning, giving you the latest you need to know, and hopefully you are enjoying the daily program. Those who are just joining us as of recent, those who have been around for the long haul, good morning, Bishop on Air. Like, subscribe, hit that notification bell. Appreciate people jumping into the chat room. I am a little earlier, might actually be doing things earlier and earlier. They're at the State House in full swing for session. I didn't leave that place until about 8:15 last night. They've got committees. They're talking about all kinds of bills and moving things. So it's been a busy, busy day. It's going to be a busy, busy couple of weeks. They've got until the May 31st deadline to pass a budget with simple majorities. They're aiming to adjourn by like May 24th or 25th, but they've got contingent days all throughout the rest of the month. But happy May 1st. I can't believe it's already this far into 2024. We'll talk a bit about the case out of DuPage County where it has people having different opinions on what should happen. It was a murder-suicide. And you have those on the side of saying the Safety Act goes too far with the Pretrial Fairness Act and ending cash bail. Others want more gun control. So we'll talk about that. But we've got to talk next about the U.S. Supreme Court putting a whole bunch of gun ban challenges into conference. What does that mean? Well, we'll talk about that next here with Bishop on Air. Supreme Court taking gun ban challenges from Illinois and from Maryland and putting them into conference for May 16th, where they'll talk about them behind closed doors. And what could possibly happen? It's a great question, something I don't think that we know yet. There's a lot of speculation out there, but is it indeed something that's going to change the trajectory of gun laws in the United States? Welcome back, Bishop on Air. Thanks for hanging out with me each and every weekday morning. I really do appreciate you guys being here. And I wanted to share with you some of what's going on here and how we've got the ongoing gun ban litigation in the state of Illinois, where it's right now in the Southern District Courts. And that has states defending the ban on more than 170 semi-automatic firearms. And clearly that's something that, you know, a lot of Illinoisans are frustrated with. So yesterday we talked about some of the latest filings and the U.S. Supreme Court when it comes to gun ban litigation, where you had preliminary actions. And I want people to make sure they understand that the preliminary actions that have happened so far have really just been on whether or not there should be temporary action blocking the law from being implemented before you actually have, some penalties. And while the case is being dealt with, somebody yesterday commented, what does it mean to advance on the merits? Well, preliminary actions, you ask for a temporary hold on the bill or on the law while the case is dealt with through evidence being laid out and a judge weighing the balance and determining on the merits which way this ultimately will go. So all those preliminary actions already went to the Seventh Circuit U.S. Court of Appeals from a Southern District case and Northern District cases, differing outcomes there. Seventh Circuit's rules that the state had a likelihood of advancing on the merits. And then you had the question on the merits go back to the Southern District of Illinois. But at the same time, you had the preliminary actions being taken to the U.S. Supreme Court. And that's where you had these various cases. And as we talked about yesterday, it had not yet happened. But looking at the cases here, you've got the Barnett v. Raul case. Again, this is from the Southern District of Illinois. where you have the plaintiffs alleging that the gun ban violates the Second Amendment, right, to keep and bear arms. The state came back and said, no, these are weapons of war. They're military grade and they should be banned. So clearly you've got the question there still have being dealt with in the Southern District Court. But back to the U.S. Supreme Court, February 12th, after the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals issued its mandate, you had petitions for writ of cert. And that's a request for the U.S. Supreme Court to hear this case. But again, it's important. This case is only on a preliminary basis. It is not on the merits. So this was the case with several other cases. So this is just the Barnett case in particular. We'll look at this from the docket of the U.S. Supreme Court. Yesterday, they ultimately distributed it to conference. All right. So what does that mean? The U.S. Supreme Court has open arguments about cases that they agree to take. And you see those headlines all the time. But not a ton of headlines about sending stuff to conference. We had a similar case with, I believe it was the Calkins case, where they sent that to conference. I think even the Naperville case, they sent that to conference. But the Supreme Court rejected taking those cases. This one seems a bit different. And I talked with Alan Gottlieb a bit yesterday, and he said that this really does signify that they're going to take the case. And Alan Gottlieb from the Second Amendment Foundation, he said that they are going to take the case, he believes, and they're going to consolidate them because there are four cases from Illinois that I saw that were sent to conference where they're going to talk about it behind closed doors and determine whether they're going to take the cases. But they also sent the Bianchi case out of Maryland challenging Maryland's gun ban. So they sent that to conference. So that seems to signify to some that this could be them taking this and possibly deliberating on whether they approve to take the cases and then consolidate them, which would address nationwide whether or not states can ban semi-automatic firearms. Costas Morris posted on X that some different outcomes here, and I think this is good for us to review. He says that you've got the Illinois cases being sent to conference for May 16th, and that we could get a decision then. But they could also relist a couple of things. So from here, he says a number of outcomes are possible. The Supreme Court of the United States could grant cert in full and hear the case in the next term. If that happens, the parties will submit more complete briefs on the merits, and oral arguments will be likely heard sometime in the fall. Our upcoming trial before Judge McGlynn would likely get stayed. And I think that that's interesting because you have the case in the Southern District of Illinois, where Judge Stephen McGlynn is advancing on the merits and even questions of, are they going to have a trial come July? So when I talked with Alan Gottlieb yesterday, he said we could find out by the end of this month if indeed they are going to take the cases and possibly even determine when they would hear the challenge. And if that's the case, they take the cases, whether they consolidate or go individually, that could mean the Southern District of Illinois case is stayed. Back to what Costas Morris has to say. Number two, he says the court could also opt to issue summary reversal, which would reverse the Seventh Circuit's without further argument and briefing. Such summary reversals are usually accompanied by a per curiam opinion explaining the action. I see this as least likely, he says. They won't decide an issue this big with a per curiam. I could be wrong, he says. Number three, he says another alternative is the court to grant cert, vacate the Seventh Circuit's ruling, and remand it back to the court for further proceedings. This would be a scenario in which the Supreme Court's not quite ready to hear the case, but does want to give the Seventh Circuit guidance on how to correct errors in its legal analysis. Something similar could happen in the event that the pending ruling in Rahimi, which is a case dealing with individuals who are, prohibited from having firearms through various things like protective orders or whatnot. But the Rahimi changes the Second Amendment analysis in a way relevant to the Beavis ruling. Number four, Costas says, finally, there's always the possibility the court opts to deny review entirely for the time being, preferring to hear the case following a final judgment, like something out of the Southern District of Illinois court. If so, we go to trial and climb the ladder all over again. If that happens, the real test will be Duncan, which is on final judgment. So no excuses. So interesting. Again, some of the analysis here from Costas Morris on X to the U.S. Supreme Court moving cases Chew conference. So again, next couple of weeks are going to be pretty big. You've got the Southern District case, where the deadline coming up in a couple of weeks for the litigants to file who their experts are, with the eye of possibly having a trial in July. But now you've got the U.S. Supreme Court moving all these gun ban challenges into conference. What does that spell out? We'll do what we can to keep you updated every morning here with Bishop on Air. Be sure to like, subscribe, and hit that notification bell. Appreciate you guys being here each and every weekday morning with Bishop on Air. Illinois State House, conversations about banning gas hookups for new construction and calls for $140 million for violence intervention. Oh, yeah, and Governor J.B. Pritzker donating a document Abraham Lincoln signed that everybody thinks really the beginning of the official actions in the Civil War. That's right, the Pritzkers owned that. And they donated it to the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum here in Springfield. But also conversations about what to do in the aftermath of a horrific case out of DuPage County. I'm Greg Bishop. Thanks for hanging out. Bishop on Air. Be sure to like, subscribe, and hit that notification bell. And join me each and every weekday morning as we traverse the landscape of Illinois news together. All right. So this case out of DuPage County. It's pretty incredible, actually. You had on Friday, and this is go to thecentersquare.com. On Friday, Julie Eglisball was murdered by her husband, Winston, in Villa Park. Winston was out on pretrial release. Illinois, if you recall, has no cash bail. And that means that certain offenses, people are let go. But he was released wearing an electronic monitoring device, which police were notified when he was close to his wife, but officers got there too late and found the couple dead, murder-suicide. Some legislators talking about how we need to change the Pretrial Fairness Act, and that's the law that ultimately allowed for the release of criminal defendants pretrial. Somebody like State Representative Dan Calkins, he says that this pretrial release program has been a failure.
I mean, the damage that it's already done, the people that are out. You talk to the friends up in Chicago, and the folks that are on electronic monitoring, they get like 24 hours or 48 hours a week that they don't have to be tracked. And so there's some intersection in Chicago where these people all go when they're not being monitored to work things out. I mean, it's craziness. But this is a very flawed law. It barely passed. And now, I mean, now we're dealing with the aftermaths, and the aftermath is terrible. And this ordeal, this horrific crime could have been prevented. This person should have been, you know, restrained, and his wife should have been protected. And this is a real problem we have. And I don't know how we're going to fix it, because there doesn't seem to be any will in this building to actually do something that's going to reduce crime.
So you can see again that report at thecentersquare.com. My colleague Katrina Peterson talking with Dan Calkins yesterday at the state capitol. So again, you know, horrific crime in DuPage, murder-suicide, somebody that was let out on pretrial release going back, and they were arrested for domestic abuse, going back and murder-suicide with his wife. So a lot of shockwaves from this. So while my colleague Katrina Peterson was at the Capitol in Springfield, I bounced over to the ALPLM, the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library Museum, where the governor was unveiling a donation that he and his wife, the First Lady MK, gave to the ALPLM about the Anaconda Plan. And it's a document that somehow the governor auctioned for, got. They did not disclose how much that document was, nor do they disclose how such a document ended up in private hands. I mean, the Presidential Records Act and all of that, and even back to the Civil War, I would imagine they had some protections, but either way. But I asked the governor about the Pretrial Fairness Act and what happened to DuPage County. Should that bring about some changes?
So the one that Bob Berlin has talked about recently, yeah. I think it's really important that state's attorneys and judges take very seriously the Pretrial Fairness Act is intended, in fact, to deal with exactly situations like this. It's being a state's attorney is a hard job. Being a judge is a hard job. These are new undertakings for many people. So I don't know that there needs to be any legislative change, but just in the way the cases are handled. You know, we need to make sure domestic violence is something that gets taken very seriously when anybody is considered whether they should remain incarcerated or not.
So clearly, the governor says that there needs to be more focus from state's attorneys and courts to see somebody as a potential danger to others and to keep them behind bars. Quick refresher, the Pretrial Fairness Act ends cash bail statewide. However, there are offenses that are detainable offenses like murder charges, some arguing that domestic abuse should be a detainable offense. We may hear more about that. I believe Senate Republicans are going to be discussing changes they'd like to see to the Pretrial Fairness Act on what can lead to people being held. But the Pretrial Fairness Act came about as a criminal justice provision saying that sometimes people can't afford bail whenever they're arrested for stealing a loaf of bread. Then they languish behind bars for what some may consider a petty crime, where the alleged murderer, who just happens to be a millionaire, is able to bail themselves out. So you could see some of the arguments from both sides there about it. But even after what happened to DuPage, even after what happened to that county sheriff, who was struck by somebody who was on fentanyl, cocaine, and opioids of some kind. And that individual was arrested and let out pretrial. So it was questions about this, some high-profile cases. But while some say the Safety Act needs to change, Pretrial Fairness Act needs to change, others, State Representative Maura Hershauer, saying that there needs to be Katrina's bill. And that's the measure that would require police to get a search warrant to search and confiscate firearms from an individual who has a protective order against them. And that measure has not advanced in either the House or the Senate. I asked the governor about Katrina's bill, and does he think that that is something that needs to happen in the aftermath of this horrific domestic violence case?
Your thoughts on that?
Well, I want to say in general, I support the concept of the bill. I will say that if you listen to state police and actually all the other police departments too, it's quite difficult to remove a firearm from somebody, even if they have given up their FOID card. But in the instance where you need to go confiscate the firearm, literally you have to bring sometimes four officers to one situation in order to remove the weapon, and if somebody doesn't want to give it to you, it's becomes quite complicated and maybe dangerous.
Think about what happened in North Carolina, where you had a felon illegal in possession of a firearm. Police go to confront, and you have slain law enforcement officers in that case. So interesting to hear the governor say he supports Katrina's bill in concept, but he recognizes the danger that could put law enforcement in. So interesting to hear all that laid out as to the reaction of what happened to DuPage County. But you also had other things going on at the Illinois State House yesterday, including a call for possibly banning natural gas hookups in Illinois. Go to thecentersquare.com, read this story from Kevin Bessler. You had Senate Bill 935 from State Senator Selena Villanueva being featured during a news conference. As she said, we must reduce pollution in our buildings and we must begin a managed transition away from dirty, expensive gas to more affordable, clean energy solutions. So that's led to some division. I believe Chicago's been battling with this idea as well. Other jurisdictions across the country have moved with this, but there's been lawsuits as well. And you've got the American Gas Association saying that natural gas has been one of the primary drivers for achieving environmental progress, and any ban on the foundation fuel will saddle consumers with significant costs for little environmental gain. One thing you can do also is go to MISO Energy and look at Illinois' energy chart and what that looks like, and you'll see that indeed there is a rather large section of natural gas. So just pull this up to show you. This is a MISO fuel mix chart. All right, you've got natural gas taking up 37%. Coal is 29%. Wind 16%. Hydro 2%. Nuclear 15%. Natural gas is a significant amount of the actual energy being utilized in Illinois. So that's just one thing that happened, but you also had advocates wanting for more funds for crime violence intervention. And this is a group of community organizers. You had State Representative Justin Slaughter there, State Senator Robert Peters, LG Sims, Michael Flager was there. And they were rallying at the State House to support funding the Reimagine Public Safety Act, and they want $140 million to do that. So we're in an interesting time at the Illinois State House where you've got budgets being talked about, but they're also passing all kinds of other laws that could see the finish line by the end of May. We'll track all of that for you. I'm Greg Bishop. Be sure to check us out tomorrow as well. Bishop on Air. Like, subscribe, hit that notification bell. Have yourselves a wonderful day. I got to get out of here. All right, guys, seriously, appreciate you. Thanks for jumping in. I know a little bit earlier than typical, but shout out to Nakuda, Randy, Warsaw. You've got Dan in there as well. Bob, appreciate you, and many others. Jeremy, Tattooed Squirrel, good morning. Still got that Tattooed Squirrel patch. Let me make sure it's out. Yeah, it's pretty awesome. Appreciate that. All right, guys, have a great day. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Cold. Mixed breath.